We're really there to help practices be successful in all those types of initiatives as it relates to behavioral health integration.
I hope you're okay, Paul. I put on the recording because some of our folks have to jump off, and I want to be able to give this information to them later. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, to calibrate on our timing, given that people do have short, schedules to fill, I don't think we need to go through a lot of kind of the problem statement. You guys mostly know about the pain points that we're trying to solve for in the provider universe, right? And also, Sue, how much time do we have?
You have until 12:30, but some of our folks had to jump off because they have another meeting. So you'll please continue, but we'll just.
We'll definitely continue. And what I'll do is I'll just ask, since we do have a few extra minutes, I'd like for Paul, because even though this is folks, the folks on the call and the practices we support are dealing with these types of pain points every day, Paul can set it up a little bit and seeing exactly what we are seeing, as these are not just bullets on a page. These are actual real world things we're dealing with our practices every day. Paul, do you want to just talk a little bit about this page?
Yeah, when we developed this model back in the 1990s, these were some of the same struggles that we were dealing with. We thought they'd be solved over time. And some of them are actually worse than they were back then, like access issues, for example. But what we know is that, the pr primary care is the de facto mental health care system in this country. And there's tremendous burnout, and people are overwhelmed. Primary care it is fragmented. There's lack of expertise in mental health, and people are dealing with competing demands with an aging population, more competing demands, and there's a lot of turnover, lack of resources. I always say, and I used to be a family doc, and there are three things that we're dealing with when we're, in these busy settings: that we have a lack of time, we have a lack of resources at hand, and we have a lack of expertise. Like, as a primary care doc, I was prescribing meds, but I couldn't go far beyond that. If someone was in crisis, I could do my best, but having those things at hand is really important. And then finally, if you look at the bottom, financial, it's important to consider the model and move shifting to value-based care, as there are a lot of segments of the healthcare system that are shifting to value-based care, then the impact of attrition and so on. So let's go to the next slide. And so given that, that there's a significant proportion of people with mental illness in this country, it has a significant impact on all these chronic conditions: diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. I worked in a diabetes clinic at the University of Washington for 28 years. I just finished doing that work in December. And constantly we were dealing with out of control diabetes and complications that didn't need to happen if we'd only addressed the mental health issues. And there's a significant lack of access to behavioral health. We've all seen this. Even as the pandemic has ended, there's just not the same availability to mental health, which then has a huge impact. If we do with undertreated or untreated depression and anxiety, there's a significant cost impact. So that's why we developed in the next slide our model, which is based on the collaborative care model, which is a layering on. I like to think of it, where the blue circle, as the primary care provider and the patient, that's the core of this model. Access within 2 to 4 business days. And we have a turnkey model for our clients. We do have a technology platform, the registries that you need, but we also have other technologies. We have our own EMR. We have behavioral health a software that enables problem solving, treatment, behavioral activation, decisional balance from motivational interviewing. And our focus is both on the physical, on the mental, but also on the physical health and behavioral activation and getting people engaged in their care and exercising for, healthful changes in their lives. And we've seen that over and over, as Nick said. Now we can see that in value-based arrangements where we're able to address not only the behavioral health, but looking at A1C and looking at total cost of care as well. So the previous slide that Nick showed you there is just, again, emphasizing the fact that we have both the services, the behavioral health clinicians, the psychiatric consultants, engagement specialists, but we also have created this platform. Actually, I had a prior company called SamePage that I developed, and we developed this platform with clinical modules that I just mentioned to you, and that's all part of Janus now, so that we can make sure that we address the fidelity to the model, which is so important, especially when you're going to take on more complex patients. You can't cut corners, you can't skimp, and you can't, move away from the pillars of the collaborative care model. So that's what we take pride in. We take that academic background and bring it forth into the real world setting to ensure that we get, great outcomes.
Any questions for Paul? We just went through a lot, and I think there's a small enough group that if you have questions, feel free to just jump in. Okay, well, I'm going to continue on. Let's see. You know the model. One of the things that that Paul just outlined is the structure of the model, the structure of the team, and most of that team is taking place in the structure and the care being delivered in the wheel. So the wheel and our systems support the ongoing care of patients in that 4 to 6 month period that he mentioned. Again, I think most of the people on this call are familiar with the model already, so I won't go into all of that, but I think it's really important also that we support the very front end with the analytics. We're actually working with, based on the POs and the practices, and in some cases, other value-based organizations. Depending on where the data comes from or who has the data and how much data they have, we'll ingest data and work with folks to do that step one, the upfront analytics. So that really embraces one of the core essential elements of the collaborative care model, which is doing things at a population health level and really analyzing the needs of the population. And so, like in Michigan, a lot of practices or a lot of the POs are using Health Focus. So that's what we're starting to work with Health Focus to really calibrate their reporting to really help drive patient identification on the front end. That's really providing a lot of value to the practices and ultimately payers as we identify gaps in care. So I wanted to just mention that. And in terms of, I think on this page, it sort of shows where we fit in with a lot of the incentives and initiatives that can be built out by the practices and being successful with the quality initiatives. Again, for full disclosure, this is probably a little bit more, I think it's a parallel with Priority, and some of the initiatives that Priority is putting in place. We've done a lot of the work here initially with some of the quality bonuses that that Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is incentivizing. And I think that when the POs are looking to help on each one of these, whether it's PCMH, which has been around for a long time, the POs are really been really successful in helping practices implement those transformative practice transformation initiatives. PDMCM also the same thing. A lot of, in fact, that's probably the spirit of this call. And then where we've started to find is that when some of the POs and practices are trying to do collaborative care on their own, that's where, because of the systems and the expertise necessary and the scalability and sustainability, that's where the POs and practices have found it really helpful to start working with us. We definitely applaud any of the folks who are doing it themselves and successful. We don't want to stop that. If people have a large practice, a large business, of doing this successfully on their own, then more power to them. A lot of times there's turnover of staff, there's people, hard to find psychiatric resources. There's a lot of factors that lead to changes in the ability to keep the collaborative care program. And that's where we come in. So our most recent PO that we signed up to do this for collaborative care is one that actually has some practices that they're delivering collaborative care through the PO directly, but they can't scale it as efficiently. So they asked us to come in and help implement some of their other practices in collaborative care. So, to each his own, I guess, and really there's no one size fits all for every practice. And we've certainly found that with value-based organizations, we bring that added level of expertise. So as we're looking at specialized programs for high-cost populations, hospital readmission type programs, utilizing the collaborative care model, that's another big area that we can help. So I'm going to turn this page over to Jennifer. She can really articulate the value proposition of how we focus on collaborative care to ensure sustainability.
Yeah, so I think everyone, is familiar with collaborative care and how it's an evidence-based model. But however, there could be a lot of challenges with developing a collaborative care program that's sustainable over time. I think Sue Voss, Paul, others who have been leaders in training practices on collaborative care, initially they have a lot of success with the training. You get people up and running, and then 6 to 9 months later, they come back to the practice. And they find that collaborative care isn't going any longer. And it's like, well, what happened? You got off to such a great start at the beginning, but now 9 months later, we don't have a strong collaborative care services anymore. And so what can happen to collaborative care programs? There could be staff turnover. So people that you hire originally, might leave, and then you have to recruit, train, a whole new team. Also, lack of leadership at the practice. You might have had a champion that was really strong in the beginning, and then they have competing demands or competing priorities that puts collaborative care more on the back burner because there's other things that take importance. And as soon as it gets put on the back burner, things start to disintegrate or crumble. And then funding concerns. In Michigan, you're fortunate that Priority Health and other payers are really supportive of collaborative care. But if you're not paying attention to the billing and making sure that the billing is done properly, that can also be a factor in not having a sustainable practice if the billing and the funding isn't coming through. So one of the benefits of working with Janus is that we're 100% focused on collaborative care. Paul, has spent his entire career developing and sustaining collaborative care programs. Ben is also a thought leader in collaborative care. So our team brings substantial thought leadership in collaborative care, and it's what we focus on, 24/7. Because we offer a turnkey solution, we take the risks involved with recruiting, hiring, and training the staff. So that's something that the primary care practice doesn't have to focus on because we're providing all the clinical support staff to your team. We try to be really strong partners and collaborators. And so we work really well with primary care practices around communicating goals, workflows, communicating the number of patients that are involved. And we also report on key metrics, such as the number of people enrolled. We like to show decreases in symptom severity for patients with depression or anxiety. And finally, we want it to be financially sustainable, not only for Janus, but more importantly, for the practice and for the physician organization. And so we believe that because we're so exclusively focused on collaborative care, that gives us an advantage over programs trying to do it themselves, knowing how complex and challenging, it can be to sustain over time.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yeah.
In the interest of time, because I want to leave a few minutes for questions too, but so when so what if a practice says, okay,
in the program scope, because we find that when our goals align with the physician organization's goals and the primary care practice's goals, everything is just that much easier and that much smoother. We do have a behavioral health services agreement to sign, and that gets things started. We ask that the primary care practices give our clinicians read-only access to your electronic health record, and that's how we use for our two-way communication tool is through that EHR access. There's a number of different ways we can identify patients who would benefit from collaborative care. There's data analytics through data provided by the physician organization or through data provided by the practice that helps us identify who from your practice would most benefit from collaborative care. And then, of course, there's always referrals from the clinicians at your practice that would send patients that they believe would benefit from collaborative care. We usually have a kickoff meeting, and we go through all the different workflows and what's involved. We share our patient collateral materials, such as a patient flyer, patient FAQ. We go through the billing overview and make sure that you understand the process for how we support the practices with the billing for the collaborative care program. And then finally, upon lunch, we're ready to start seeing your patients. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to see the patients at the primary care practices. And then after lunch, we continue to be in close collaboration with regular touch-base meetings. If there's any hiccups or glitches, we want to solve for those right away. And again, our goal is to be a really strong partner and collaborator with both the physician organization and the practices.
I guess I'm gonna I can go back to the slides, but in the interest of time, do folks have questions? I see the group has kind of narrowed down a little bit. So let's see, who's still part of the PO leadership here that might still be on? I noticed Marie had to drop. Marie and GLPO is actually one of the POs that we're working closely with. Who else is on here?
So the majority of the folks from the POs have left. So that's why I put the recording on, but I will play the
Wonderful.
recording. But I did want to
Okay.
let you know, Marie did send me a note, and she said, you know, if I have to leave before, she said she wanted to give a message, and she said they've partnered with Janice and have four practices now that are up and running. It's going well. Practices are pleased, and patients have expressed positivity, and their plan is to expand to more practices this year. So, just
Thanks,
her,
Sue.
yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect. Stacy, Jordan, I see you're still on. Maybe it's in the background, though, as you have multitasking, which is fine. But to on the priority side, as I mentioned, I would really love to explore a little bit, deeper relationship with what your initiatives are, and we're so aligned. So I'd love to maybe open up a dialogue there, maybe set up some time with you guys after this call at some point.
Yeah, I was gonna
I think
say
I dropped
Stacy's
my
appointments in.
email.
Oh, sorry. Yep, I was
Oh,
just gonna say I dropped my email in the chat. So if you want to go ahead and send me an email, we can work to get a meeting set up. I would love that.
okay, that's ideal. Yeah. That's so we will follow up immediately after this with an email and get that ball rolling. I don't know.
Great.
And for any, you guys are all in different parts of Michigan. We're actually having a small entourage of Michigan travels next week. Although Paul is probably going to be making the next trip, so at some point we'll also, with any of you, Sue, I don't think you and Paul have probably seen each other in person for like 25 years, but we've had a lot of Zooms, and so sometimes it's nice to also swing by the office, grab a coffee or something. And so for the Janus team, some of us will going to be in the Michigan area next week if the stars align.
I did
So
want to let you know, Nick, too, Novello, who is in our northern region, they recently joined MCSE, and they shared too that they're looking to partner with Janice. I think
already
that
have.
you've got, yes. So, and their feedback too was very positive. So I just wanted to let our folks from Priority Health know that the feedback thus far has been very much in appreciation for the model, and it's going well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. That's great. Thanks. That's great to
Excuse me.
hear.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Since we have a few minutes left, Sue, it would be really great, since you're like boots on the ground, involved with all the, not just collaborative care, but case management, looking at chronic conditions like you were talking about at the beginning of the meeting. What where are there opportunities to go back to sort of what we'd worked on years ago, like Compass, where there may be an opportunity, whether it's not necessarily value-based care, but even where organizations may want to develop quality programs for diabetes or congestive heart failure, And there's an opportunity to address the depression and anxiety while we focus on health behaviors. Or maybe there are even value-based arrangements of some kind. We know that that's, burgeoning, but I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, given your understanding of the lay of the land?
Yeah, so I've been around for a long time. I will say, what we learned through Compass Care was when you focus on a condition, that condition will improve. And what we knew is when we focused on cardiovascular, diabetes, and depression, we saw all three improve. We did a backpedal. And now, the state of Michigan, we're very thankful. We're happy that we're focusing on depression, but depression is our sole focus in a siloed model, right? So if we focus on depression, we will see depression improve. I think we have learned, and we learned, much from the Compass Care model is people are people, they're not conditions. And when we treat them in silos, we're not going to see the big improvements overall. And I think that's what Janice is saying is we're understanding the need to focus holistically on all conditions, but all conditions interdigitalized. I had a psychiatrist that introduced me to Sue, you are talking about interdigitalizing folks. You have to treat the whole in understanding human beings are complex. And if we look at that complexity. Yes, sometimes we have to prioritize that, but we can't treat it in silos. So that's what I would offer. And if you look at where we started in Compass Care, I was assigned to look at the case management side and work with all of the partners on the case management side. And we defaulted to the Case Managed Side of America, CMSA was in there, and the certification for case management. And we quickly had to link that, and we linked it very nicely with the expertise of Paul, others that were undergoing the through the AIM process, that you had to have a process, and that process linked well patient identification, who are the targeted populations for this. You have to do an assessment. And that assessment is comprehensive, behavioral, medical, social, biomedical, psychosocial. Some might remember when that was a thing. And then through that comprehensive assessment, put together a care plan that's based on the patient's priorities. Where do they want to start? And that's what I would offer. And then the importance, which, Dr. Caton called me out and at the time I was like kind of taken aback. Was a lot of what case managers do are stuff. We do a lot of stuff, but we don't think about the measurable outcomes of that. And that was the importance of the follow-up and monitoring, that treat to target treatment intensification. And that was pretty critical. That is part of a case management process. It's a little said lighter because we like to focus on the stuff. And then the case closure. And that was where in Compass Care, I don't think we ever fully got there, but was really thinking about the relapse planning for patients, that self-management piece that we really steeped the importance of setting the patient up for success longevity. That's what I would offer.
No, that sounds great. I agree with all of what you said, and definitely preparing people for that relapse prevention, preparing them for a potential recurrence and getting them back in care before they dip too low with their depression, and then everything's just we're back at step one. So that's really important, and we certainly focus on that as well. Especially in those individuals with multiple chronic conditions where a relapse can very quickly become a very high cost event with lots of complications, and then it could take months and months to get them back because of all the complexity of their medical conditions. So, good. Well, thank you.
I don't know, Jordan and Stacy, what you think about all of that, or, thinking about with Janice and some of their focus, because some of the things that you're speaking of, what we did learn is when we improved depression, I mean, we had practices that had case, stories about this, is they kind of wrote the person off because they came in very curmudgeon-y and they weren't very enjoyable to work with. And once they started getting the depression underhand and in control, then the person was more engaged to work on their diabetes, to work on their blood pressure.
Yeah, I'd say it's so, I mean, we see those same things, right? That mental health is so tied to so many other aspects of a person's health. Like, we know this, we see that in the data as well. So really applaud the work that you're doing at Janus. And I think that there's definitely room for some further discussion on our side of the house to see, how we can all support each other in these efforts. I would echo what Stacey had said, that she dropped her email in the chat. Please, please, please set up some time with us. I would just ask that if you could maybe wait until closer to like July, just because we're trying to fast and furious settle our current year program. But we would love to talk with you about future state of our like behavioral health collaborative care measure within our program and see where we could maybe have some partnership.
Yeah, great.
That sounds great. Quick question on kind of priorities, kind of in a unique position with Priority slash Corewell. Could I ask you, how it sort of ties in with being kind of vertically integrated and the whole, like you have the ability to kind of do some of these
Yeah.
priority initiatives within the ecosystem of Corewell, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would say behavioral health is not an area that we are probably as integrated as we should be, just to be fully transparent, but there's opportunity, obviously. There are a lot of projects where we try to figure out where those intersections really make sense. I think this definitely is one. But we don't have like a full strategy, I would say, right now, in this space on how we best integrate. So another area where we possibly could collaborate and talk
Yeah.
more.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you even get something set up, we might be able to include some folks on the Corewell side too to just talk about ideas and just some of your findings as well through your services.
Yeah. Yeah, because your focus here, and I know we're kind of at the tail end of a discussion on probably going straying a little bit from, but your focus here is on helping these programs that are more in the provider, sort of independent provider community. So it almost by definition, the spirit of today's call was really focused on that independent provider community. Is that the way to think about these initiatives versus, where I'm steering, where I'm asking about, which is Corewell would be outside of the scope of
Yeah.
like this.
Yeah, because they are employing physicians, many of them in practice groups that are all integrated within the Corewell system. You're right. But let's talk more at a later date and see, where there might be opportunities.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Just so you're aware, Nick, Trinity is also a group of employed. So some, we
Right.
have mixed independents as well as systems. And I'd want to go back and ask Blue Cross Blue Shield. They probably have the data around that. Is what percentage of the participants in CoCare are independent versus health systems? Because they might be able to give some additional information on that.
Jordan and Stacy, I was wondering, do you know Dr. Jane from Corewell? I guess he used to be spec, I guess he is, I think he's heading behavioral health at Corewell. Is that right?
I do not. Stacey, do you know that I
name?
do not either. That doesn't sound familiar to me, but I haven't had a ton of interaction with them
Okay.
since coming over to this team.
Okay. Yeah, I knew Kieran Taylor. Sue, you know Kieran. And so she used to run things there at Spectrum, which is now Corewell, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And so she said that the person that has succeeded her is Dr. Jane, Jain. But if neither of you know about that person, that's fine.
No, and we interface a lot more in the primary care space, just full transparency,
Yeah.
just because our program is focused on primary care. But obviously, again, as we've been discussing, the intersections are there. So let's try to figure out maybe we can look and see if we know someone who knows Dr. Jane
Yeah, okay.
through like our population health team over at Corewell was kind of who I was thinking to start with on all of
Okay.
this.
Because I think that could lead to some other good connections.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Well, we're really grateful for the opportunity to,